Small businesses are grappling with the impact of these uncertain times and looking for resources. That's why Dell Technologies assembled an all-star lineup of podcasters to create the first-ever virtual conference to share advice and inspiration for small businesses. Dell Technologies is here, from keeping you connected while working remotely with Windows 10 and Microsoft Teams to providing relevant content for businesses. Search Dell Technologies Small Business Podference on radio.com, Spotify, or Apple Podcasts starting May 1st.
For the perfect scam, I'm your host, Michelle Kosinski.
And I'm Frank Avagnale.
Frank has played a doctor, a lawyer, a pilot, and now he's playing a podcast host. He joins me, along with other top fraud experts, to share some of America's biggest scam stories.
Somebody's always going to be trying to come up with a new scheme. It's just too much money to be made easily.
Frauds, scams, con artists, shocking tales of deceit. You name it, we got it all. The Perfect Scam from AARP.
UrgentSpecialist.com is the website. He is a physician at Urgent Specialist, and his name is Dr. Scott Hardiman. He's been with us before. Doctor, it's a pleasure to have you on with us today. Looking forward to some information that you have for us.
Thank you, Annie. I'm glad you all are staying safe as well.
Yeah, we have socially distanced ourselves. I'm at in my home. Ryan is at his friend's studio. Katie is still in the regular studio. But we have scattered. And a lot of people have made adjustments in their lives, tried to keep it as normal as possible with as many modifications as necessary. Real quick, before we get to some important information about Urgent Specialist, what kind of advice or encouragement do you have for people who are maybe a few weeks into this social distancing thing and wondering if it's going to make any impact and wondering if all of this obscurity is going to actually pay off in the end?
I think it will. I think trying to limit exposure from one individual to the other, be that through distancing and through mask wearing and appropriate hygiene, I think it will pay off in the end. It's just like many other respiratory viruses and illnesses. If you can limit the exposure and contact people have with one another that are sick and try and identify those folks early, it just slows the transmission of the disease completely.
Yeah, I think that it's important to understand that this is an investment in time. Also, each day that we buy ourselves here gives the experts the opportunity to continue to develop testing on treatments and potential vaccines. You've heard some of the discussions, I'm sure, about the hydroxychloroquine, about the Z-Pak, the combination of those. Can you just tell us, since you are a doctor and you're a physician at Urgent Specialists, can you tell us maybe the process of that type of medical testing and why we couldn't have started just doing this yesterday? What's the value of time when it comes to going through testing for treatments like this?
Well, so for the drug testing itself, I think, it's important to acknowledge the research and the work that's been done around the world at this point. It's a tricky time when you're in the middle of a crisis to do randomized double-blinded studies, but they're beginning to emerge. There was a study last week that came out of China, I believe, that looked at the combination of hydroxychloroquine and azithromycin or Azithromax. And I think over time we'll see more and more of that. What makes it tricky is that we're in crisis mode, kind of on a wartime footing now. And so it's hard to have these new things come on board and have the time at our leisure in order to test them, in a double-blinded study like that. But certainly from an anecdotal perspective, it seems as if there's a lot of promise related to that drug combination or just the hydroxychloroquine by itself. The data that seems to be emerging suggests that it slows the ability of virus to gain access to the individual. It also tends to, most importantly, decrease the viral shedding time, which is that asymptomatic period when you're out and about either before you develop acute symptoms or as you're convalescing so that you're less likely to pass it to other people.
Yeah, I'm interested in hearing how it can be encouraged to speed up the trial. But, at some point, I guess I don't know that you can speed it up any more than potentially they already have. We're speaking with Dr. Scott Hardiman. He is a physician at Urgent Specialist. UrgentSpecialist.com is the website. I want to ask you about when the president is at his press conferences, he's being told, which he knows, you're not a doctor, but yet you're encouraging people to try it. When the president is making these comments and he's suggesting that we need to look further into these treatments or just give it a try, his phrase is, what do you have to lose? Is it helpful? Is it hurtful to have the president trying to provide this kind of hope to the American people who are looking for hope anywhere that they can find it?
Oh, no, I think providing hope is very important right now. A few weeks into this, as you said, it starts to be a bit of a burden. It drags your family down, drags the economy down. So it does appear to be hopeful, the information that's out there. You know, we kind of go through our own testing process here. The FDA did, if I'm not mistaken, authorize emergency declaration about a week ago, allowing the use of hydroxychloroquine in that combination with other drugs to use for hospitalized patients. The question is, you know, once you've reached that point of being quite ill, is it going to be overly beneficial versus trying to identify people with more mild to moderate symptoms out in the community that it potentially be beneficial for and to our first responders as well. But, you know, it's important to have hope, obviously, at this point. And some of the other drug trials that are going on with antiviral medications, you know, that those folks that this is largely being tested on are pretty sick at this point. And so it's going to be a while until we know for certain if it moves in, you know, one direction or the other. So leaning on some of the data from other countries and some of the other studies that are happening will be helpful to just raise the spirits and hopefully, you know, get people out and about again once they lift that quarantine.
We're speaking with a physician at Urgent Specialist, Dr. Scott Hardiman. Urgent Specialist is located on Manchester, just east of Highway 141. And I would encourage you people, if you've been looking for urgent care needs of any kind, to check out urgentspecialist.com and learn more about them. Testing has been one of those things that has, at least at the beginning when the tests that we had didn't really work, kind of put us behind the eight ball a little bit more than we needed to. But testing seems to be exponentially increasing our access to it and our ability to turn around results a bit quicker. Dr. Hardiman, what can you tell us about testing at your facility specifically, but also across the country?
So globally, the testing has largely centered around what's called PCR testing, which is a molecular test looking for the molecular structure of the virus itself. You know, the CDC developed its own test and pushed that out to the communities, and I think we're starting to ramp up and see that quality control across the board really be more available. The testing is, as of last week, is going to start making a little bit of a shift to looking at antibody testing. So again, the PCR test looks to see if there's a certain number of viral particles on board and identifies its molecular structure, but it doesn't tell us what's actually going on inside the individual or the patient. Antibody testing can be done on serum or blood draws, and I believe there's an approved mechanism to the FDA last week that allows a finger prick that will screen an individual's blood to see if they have antibody levels to this, which there's different phases or types of antibodies. Some come up early in the course of an infection, and then they drop off, and then there's in the convalescent stages you're recovering those hopefully protective antibodies that prevent you from having a secondary infection or making you immune to this type of virus down the road a piece. So those aren't readily available, but I think they're coming very soon, and those should be point-of-access tests that hopefully will be available not just through the points of high contact like the emergency departments, but also through urgent cares, primary care doctors' offices, et cetera. They're quick. They take about 10 to 15 minutes to turn results around, and data is key here. If we can identify a segment of the population, as many people theorize, that have been exposed to this already and that there's potentially antibodies that help to make them resistant to infection going forward, or to figure out what the prevalence through communities as this marches through the country to be able to track those early antibodies up and be able to quarantine or isolate those individuals or those communities to try and slow the transmission spread to, again, flatten that curve. But getting out to the community more as opposed to reacting to the sickest of the sick where we're treating people that meet real strict criteria, hopefully that testing will open up more and more to the community and the public so we can identify folks before they really manifest those very severe symptoms or drop off the cliff and end up, you know, intubated or at the hospital in very severe condition.
Dr. Scott Hardiman on the line. He is a physician at Urgent Specialist, a great partner with the Annie Frye Show. Doctor, thank you very much for sticking around with us. We got a few questions that we would like to ask you.
You bet. I'll do my best.
All right. Well, the first one here is what your thoughts are on that April 30th date that the president has extended the social guideline distancing. Do you think that April 30th is going to be enough time for us to get ahead of this enough so that we can at least start to get back to normal?
Well, I don't know, honestly, that anyone has an answer to that. This is an incredibly fluid situation. I can just speak from how we're handling things in our medical practice that most every day our protocols and parameters change how we're trying to take care of patients. So it's I think you always have to set a target and you work towards that and see, but I wouldn't be surprised if those dates change as we get a little closer to that. I think a lot of that just depends on what the curve looks like here, what the number of cases look like across the country, and if we see this start to flatten out and reach our peak and it starts to drop off a bit. But honestly, it's probably difficult to know.
Dr. Hardiman, this question comes from Tony online. I don't know if it's referencing the chloroquine treatment we were talking about at the time, but it says, does COVID-19 actually damage heart tissue, as some have said? Is that why people with heart disease are at higher risk?
Well, that gets very complicated. So traditionally, the COVID virus seems to gain access to the respiratory tree and to the lungs. And that's where most of the inflammatory response seems to take place. So a vast majority of people are struggling with pneumonias or just thickened inflamed tissue within the lungs that makes oxygenation poor. Recently, within the past week or so, there's been evidence beginning to mount that there's what are called microembolic events, where there are small blood clots that are thrown off. Now, whether or not that happens because patients are sedentary and laying around with less circulation, or whether or not the virus or the inflammatory response is triggering something within the vessels themselves that make them more prone to clotting. Clearly, people with cardiovascular disease, with diabetes, of increased age, and other comorbid states tend to do worse. And cardiovascular disease certainly is one of those things. But there may be more to the end game on this once we know more about this virus as far as potential risk for cardiovascular disease along with it.
We're speaking with an urgent specialist physician online at urgentspecialist.com, Dr. Scott Hardiman joining us right now. Lee wants to know, he's saying, what's the longest it'll take for symptoms to show up? I understand that there are people who can be asymptomatic the whole time, but if you are going to show symptoms, is there any consistency that if you're going to feel it, you're going to feel it by this many days past exposure?
Yeah, I think there is. Actually, largely across the globe, we've always said about 14 days or so. It seems as if that time frame is shortening slightly, 5 to 7 days or so from initial exposure. It also has to do with the amount of exposure that you have. So a community exposure where there may not be as much contact with someone that has a high viral load, it may take a little more time for the virus to replicate until you reach those peak onset symptoms. So it may push out 10 to 14 days or so. In the healthcare worker environment, obviously, if you're exposed continuously every single day, which unfortunately many of us are, then the viral load early on will have a tendency to peak. But it seems to be anywhere from as early as 5 days to as much as 14 days. But you're absolutely right. There's a large population of individuals that are asymptomatic spreaders of this. So that's where I think that rapid point of access antibody testing can potentially be helpful if you can identify people that have onset of their immunity kicking in to fight the virus, but they're not having a lot of symptoms. And then, of course, on the tail end of that, too, we would typically talk about after viral illnesses, once your symptoms start to get better, you're not really shedding a whole lot of virus after that. And that's not necessarily the case here. There's some evidence that you can shed the virus for up to 21 days, even 30 days. And I think last week I saw a study that said out to 45 days, although I've only seen that one place. Moral of the story is a pretty solid 2-week period of time after your symptoms have resolved. There's potential still that you could be passing the virus. And so wearing a mask obviously is important as a source control if you're a carrier and or a relatively asymptomatic person. It helps to prevent the spread of the virus.
Dr. Hardiman, question from online from Kevin. He asks, isn't it safer that we should be more than 6 feet away? Is that actually enough if you're in the same room as somebody who has the virus?
So there's droplet exposure and aerosolized exposure to this. Droplet exposure is just that stuff when you sneeze and you see those little respiratory particles, kind of saliva kind of moving around. That usually is in that sort of 6 to 8 foot range. Aerosolization of this, because this is does at least appear to be more communicable or contagious, if there's a lot of heavy respiration and or if there's a lot of, if in our world, I'm an ear, nose, and throat physician, so if there's procedures that we would have to do on the airway that would cause someone to gag or cough, they're likely aerosolizing much smaller respiratory particles that can circulate a lot further and stay active and land on surfaces as well where they potentially could be picked up. So 6 feet is certainly a good number. I think that's what the standard people are saying is, but I think everyone has probably seen that study that came out, or at least some headline recently that said it can spread for as much as 27 feet away. I think there's a point where you just have to say, okay, enough's enough at that point. But certainly a good distance is reasonable. And if you're out and about, then put a mask on as well to try and prevent if you are one of those less symptomatic or asymptomatic carriers from passing it to someone else too.
We're speaking with Dr. Scott Hardiman, a physician at Urgent Specialist. You can find more information online at urgentspecialist.com. And we are reading questions right now from our Facebook Live at facebook.com/Annie Fry Show. Julie wants to know, does Urgent Specialist do testing?
We do. So currently we have a limited supply of what are called PCR tests. Testing is done largely at this point in time. What happens if you have symptoms of a respiratory illness, you can call the hotlines at various hospitals or the medical center, and they'll direct you whether or not you meet criteria or not. Because of such limited quantities of tests that are largely available, they're trying to triage out patients that seem to be furthest down that path of their disease progression and get them tested. But that's leaving potentially people that have mild to moderate symptoms that are sort of told to self-isolate or to quarantine, but that puts a lot of burden on individuals. So we do have test kits available. We encourage people to call ahead. We have a limited number, but identifying those patients with this PCR test can be very helpful. It's a test that's slightly different, so the testing is done, getting respiratory secretions is the way it's done. You can submit tests by coughing mucus into a specimen container, and it goes to the lab directly for results to be turned around versus these drive-by test places where a swab is done at the back of the nose in order to try and gain enough viral particles to replicate, as I mentioned, through that DNA or RNA test, I should say.
Dr. Hardiman, piggybacking on that a little bit, Don online says, my mother had all the symptoms of COVID except for shortness of breath and was denied testing. How many unconfirmed cases do we think are out there because of the lack or lack of testing, I guess?
That is the question. That changes the numbers completely if we can identify that group of individuals. I think testing is really key in that case. The more tests we can do, they want to be valid tests. Obviously, you need them to be ones that are going to have a good sensitivity and specificity to the virus itself. But the more information we can get, the better. So it's very difficult to answer that question. My suspicion is that there are a number of people that we haven't identified that have either had this virus or are in some early stages of that. Because, again, the vast majority of people get this and don't get overly ill with it. I think the numbers are around 80% of people have relatively mild symptoms of that. So there's probably a pretty large population of that. And we'll only know that through more and more testing. And hopefully that just that this PCR test as well as these rapid antibody tests become much more readily available to the community to be able to get access to them.
Urgent specialist physician Dr. Scott Hardiman with us right now. You can learn more about them at urgentspecialist.com. Kurt says, we just heard the story about the tiger at the zoo in, I guess, New York that has contracted COVID-19. Kurt says, since animals can catch the virus, are steps being taken to protect beef, pork, poultry, food sources, or is that even necessary?
Not that I'm aware of, but again, pretty fluid situation. And I would say that that's only the second report I've heard. About 3-4 weeks ago, there was a report of a dog that had tested positive for this particular strain of virus as well. But to my knowledge, I doubt that that would be a huge concern. But if it is, obviously, I think we'll probably know more and more pretty readily.
Doctor, we don't have a whole lot of time left. This question actually comes from me. I had to ask you one. What are we hoping to see from chloroquine? I know the data right now is too early to tell for sure, but if this is a treatment for COVID-19, what are we hoping that does? Just reduces the death rate? It's not going to get rid of people catching it, right?
Well, so the medication, and I would give you sort of three medications just to mention in passing. So, of course, the one you hear about is hydroxychloroquine or its precursor drug, chloroquine. The second is just simple zinc, like Zicam and zinc supplementation. The third is azithromycin. So kind of the classic combination people talk about is the combination of those three, or at least the antibiotic azithromycin and chloroquine or hydroxychloroquine. What hydroxychloroquine and the combination of zinc do is that it blocks, helps to block and shut down the receptor in the lungs that the virus gains access to. So it doesn't stop it completely, but it does seem to prevent its entry point. Zinc is actually a pretty good antiviral type medication that can stop viruses from replicating, but it has a hard time getting inside the cells. So taking hydroxychloroquine tends to open up the ionic channels and let that intracellularly and help to slow down the replication. So if you can think about that combination, for instance, of you stop it from getting in, but what does get in, it helps to fight it off. And then adding azithromycin to it, there are some potential cardiac complications as you load up these drugs in combination with one another, but there are some studies from years ago that show that it has a bit of an anti-inflammatory, antiviral response, but it really is an antibiotic. So the question is it just helping to deal with some of the secondary pneumonias that are there? So So to your question, I would say it's an issue of trying to limit the amount of viral exposure that someone has so that they don't manifest tremendous amounts of symptoms, so that they don't get as sick or prevent them from getting to that late stage. They end up admitted to the hospital and have a major inflammatory response, which then leads to lung damage, and also tends to help cut down the viral shedding time, so it makes the disease hopefully a little bit less transmissible as well. That one thing I wanted to point out is that the other area people talk about with hydroxychloroquine is that it does do that. There's a late phase inflammatory response that happens when people get quite sick with this, called a cytokine storm. And it appears that that seems to be blunted somewhat if caught very early with hydroxychloroquine. Again, there's a lot of intense research going on, so I'm by no means an expert in that particular drug combination, but it certainly seems promising at this point without a whole lot of other options that are out there.
Well, we are so very grateful for all of this information. This is just like an information dump of everything that people are wondering and needing real factual information from somebody who understands the medicine behind it and not everything else, the economic impact, the political impact. People want the real facts, and being able to get them from you, Dr. Scott Hardiman, is a very, very valuable thing to our listeners right now. Thank you so much. As you said, you do have testing available at Urgent Specialists. People should probably call, I suppose.
Yes, please do. That's
ahead.
Right. And we have our own criteria, too, so it's helpful if they call ahead to know that they beat that criteria.
Small businesses are grappling with the impact of these uncertain times and looking for resources. That's why Dell Technologies assembled an all-star lineup of podcasters to create the first ever virtual conference to share advice and inspiration for small businesses. Dell Technologies is here, from keeping you connected while working remotely with Windows 10 and Microsoft Teams to providing relevant content for businesses. Search Dell Technologies Small Business Podference on radio.com, Spotify, or Apple Podcasts starting May 1st.